Hello and welcome into this edition of the Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lav. And Rex, before we get into this podcast, I want to address something that came up on Sunday night / Monday morning. And it comes to us from our friend named, quote, Hoboski. Who mentioned in our YouTube comments section, which again, feel free to dive in there. Would love to interact with you all as I've been doing over the past couple of weeks. Quote, this podcast has gotten too polished.
Too polished, he says.
I miss the old days on this pod. You guys were more casual. Not anymore. Just seems like every other Golf Channel show now. Rex, is there anything you'd like to say?
I'm glad you said it. That's exactly what I had written in my notes. So apparently you and I were both thinking the same thing. Too polished, you say.
Too
and
polished.
There is something to be said for this, and we certainly don't intend for that to happen, but I think the idea of the pod going to linear TVs on Monday has created a bit more structure around the pod. We just can't ramble. We just can't do things willy-nilly. I mean, we've got to get it in a 52-minute window. It can't be a 53-minute window or a 54-minute window. It's got to be a 52-minute window. So that's the first goal. We also have some breaks we have to get in. So yes, it is a little bit more polished. However, this version of the pod, which does not go on linear, has not become polished. And just to prove my point to, how did you say it? At Hoboski?
Hoboski. I'm gonna pronounce it Hoboski.
Okay, Hoboski, meet me on camera one, because I was going to tell this story just now on Golf Today. And it was because it was based on anyone who watched the TGL match on Tuesday night, saw Tiger Woods make what he called one of the most embarrassing gaffes of his entire career. He didn't understand what was being said. And because you're in a simulator, he had 199 yards to a pin and thought someone just said 99, because that's sort of how you do it on the PGA Tour. You never put the one or the two in front of it. You can just tell if you look up, you can see, oh, it's 199 yards.
That looks far.
That doesn't seem like 99 yards at all. Well, in the virtual world, he got a little confused and hit it 100 yards. And it is impressive that he hit a perfect 100-yard shot. But the laughter from that, and his team was getting trounced anyway, so it didn't matter, created probably one of the more viral moments of the season on TGL. I had a similar circumstance over the course of my career. I was going to tell this on Golf Today, on the roundtable that you and I just completed. But then I thought to myself, our audience deserves to be the only ones that hear this story. And here's what happened. It was years and years ago, before my time at Golf Channel, I was asked to caddy for a PGA Tour player in a Monday qualifier over at what is now the Valspar Championship. It was Gavin Coles. He was playing on the tour at the time. He had a mix-up. His caddy couldn't make it on the Monday. So I agreed to go out to Innisbrook and to caddy in the Monday qualifier. We get to about the sixth hole, and things aren't going great for Gavin. He's probably not going to be one of the Monday qualifiers. He was one or two over at the time. And at this point, he's a little... Yeah, he's not going to make it. He's a little disgusted, and he kind of turned to me, and he could see that the plate, the yardage plate, was right next to me. He goes, what do we got? And I looked down at the plate, and I glanced back up, and I said, 66, middle of the green. And he hits the wedge shot, and he's posing over it, and it drops 40 yards short. And without saying another word, I kind of glanced down and went, 99, middle of the green. I've never caddied again. I was fired on the spot. I was told just to walk away. I think I'd also lost a head cover in those six or seven holes. So it clearly was not for me. But it can happen. Tiger, it can happen.
I mean, it can certainly happen. Remember when I played with Jason Sobel a couple years ago? I thought I was flagging every single iron shot, but it kept coming up like routinely 10 yards short. And I was posing over it, club twirling. I should have had a great round going and said I was just making a million bogeys. Turns out on the 15th or 16th hole, he goes, huh.
Meters.
I've had this in meters the entire time. I mean, it certainly happens. We'll get into TGL here in a second. I just want to circle back, Rex, on Hoboski and this claim that this is too polished. Because, yes, there is structure in terms of now we have to incorporate commercial breaks. Now we have these defined segments where we're still talking about the exact same thing we would always talk about on the podcast. Instead, now it's just called something like boots on the ground or punch shots. Or
love it or
lab it. Like the exact same topics, just framed differently. It helps keep the structure. It's good for lower thirds. Potentially could be sponsorable. Like these are all things you have to do on linear television. I would grossly push back against the notion that we have changed at all, like the tone or the conversation that you and I have on the podcast just because it's now on linear television. We talk about things that would never even be broached on Golf Central or Golf Today. And so I do want to put that out there and defend our very podcast. I have spent, Rex, an inordinate amount of time of the past couple of days watching TGL. I watched most of the triple header on Monday. I watched the Tiger match on Tuesday. we're past the halfway point of this TGL season now. Like, have your feelings at all changed over the past couple weeks? This is the first time we probably touched on the Simulator League in about a month.
No, because I think I was optimistic, probably more so than a lot of people, at least in the golf media, were coming into this, because I felt like the idea, the concept behind it, I really liked. I love the technology. I love the idea that we're going to get essentially a round of golf and a 2-hour window. I love the idea that we're going to see the insights from the players, from themselves in the middle of a round of golf without having to worry about dancing around. How do you interview a player when he's in the middle of a PGA Tour event? It's really hard. I've tried to do it. It's not easy. So I'm not at all surprised. I felt like this was going to be good, and it was all contingent on the idea that the players needed to be the personalities. They needed to understand that they were the product now, that you needed to go out and entertain, that this isn't a competition that you just put the blinders on and keep your head down, that this is something that you need to allow some sort of personality to seek out. And not all of them have done it. Certainly there's been some that I've kind of rolled my eyes and thought, yep, that's what I expected from that player. But when you see Tom Kim just rolling on the ground laughing yesterday, Tuesday, during the match, the Tiger Woods hit a 99-yard shot instead of a 199-yard shot. Granted, he's going to lose, but that was funny. That was part of the process. I'm like you. I was a very captive audience. I flew home on Monday from San Diego, and so I was on a plane for pretty much the entire triple header. So I watched all of it, and I was wildly entertained. I love the new camera on the flag. Yeah. It's such a cool perspective. Yeah, it's such a cool perspective. I was actually going, and I'm a little disappointed I didn't do it now. I was talking with the executive producer who works for TGL. His name is Jeff Newbarth. And I used to work with him at the Golf Channel. He was my original producer at Morning Drive, taught me a lot about TV. And I wanted to try to get him on the podcast this week. Actually, I'll endeavor to do this next week when he has a bit of time to maybe exhale after what happened the last 2 days. But twofold. One, I do want to get his thoughts on how it is going from his perspective. We've heard from everyone else. I'd love to get his thoughts from his perspective, and this is going to be a good tease. He was also there for my worst moment in TV. And I will allow him to tell that story. It happened on President's Day, which is why we were going to do it this week. But we can push it back. You guys will hear that story next week. But I wasn't surprised at all. I was actually very impressed. And now that we've had some close ones, certainly the matches on Monday, I think all three of them came down to the last hole, if not mistaken. There was a hole in one. There were chip-ins. Like, it was entertaining.
It certainly was entertaining. I don't know if you should tell that story. It sounds like a little bit too polished for our podcast. And my thing with TGL, Rex, is like, it's always been too big to fail. Like, you have the muscle of ESPN. You look at every segment during the show. It's sponsored. The cameras are sponsored. The hammers presented by or delivered by FedEx. Like, there's a lot going on, and there's big money invested. It's why they keep flashing them in the crowd. And so, you know, I didn't think that this was just going to be a flash in the pan. I didn't think this was just going to be one season and then it was going to fade away. And I think I've been pleasantly surprised, and I've enjoyed TGL more than I thought I was going to. And I think that's a lot to do because of the players. And I think this triple header that you had on President's Day was the perfect example of this, because if there was any time for the players to be weary of this, to be completely disinterested, it was going to be during that triple header. Most of those players had just played three consecutive weeks with Pebble Beach, Phoenix, and then the Genesis Invitational. They were just coming off of a brutally difficult golf course in pretty nasty conditions, at least for half of the week, flying all the way across the country to then go play in a simulator golf league, including Ludvig Åberg, the tournament winner, who got home at 3:30, slept for 2 hours, then had to play two matches at 4 o'clock and then the nightcap. And yet the action was really good. Like, some of the best golf that we have seen. The players were engaged. They were energetic. They seemed to care about the outcome. That was something that I think had lacked over the first couple of weeks, is that players were kind of figuring out what it all meant. Should I care about the competition? Is it just like a silly free for all? And look, I'm not going to pretend to care completely about the SoFi Cup and the standings and who's inside the playoff picture. But like, the 2 hours are entertaining. It's harmless fun. It's great to see golf during a time of week when we typically would not see golf. If you love golf, you like seeing golf on your television screens. I don't think it needs to be game changing. It's never going to take over the PGA Tour. Sometimes good can just be good enough, and we should just enjoy it for what it is. And right now, I'm enjoying TGL for exactly what it is and what it's supposed to be.
Yeah. And again, this goes to the idea that you and I have talked about it, that probably not our cup brand of vodka, if we're talking about golf, because you and I both sort of like the 72-hole PGA Tour stroke play formula that they've created. That's what we were drawn to. That's why we cover golf for a living. However, yes, I've been wildly entertained by what's happened. And two things that I wanted to add to what you just said. One, the idea that we're in this entirely dead zone when it comes to sports, that football season is over. Now, it seems like the NBA and NHL, and we're probably going to touch on their all-star games again, but you're sort of right in the middle of their season as well, where things are quiet down. We haven't made it to baseball. We just started spring training. It's really good timing on the case of TGL. And I'll also even take it a step further, because I kind of dug in on this last week when TGL announced the change to the hammer rules. I don't know if anybody was really paying attention, but my take on it was good. Good for them. Because someone, a player, pointed out that the PGA Tour would never do that in the middle of a season. My comeback to this player was, this isn't the PGA Tour. Forget about the sanctity of the competition. Like, that's not what this is about. You have to worry about how entertaining that competition is. And they made a move, and we saw it firsthand in the Atlanta match when they threw the hammer late, and I think they were down 3 or 4 points at the time, and they ended up earning 2 or 3 points. So they cut it to 1. They ended up tying it. Like, that made it an exciting match. I love the idea that they're not so in love with themselves that they're just going to cling to some sort of idea of, well, we couldn't do this mid-season because it would somehow corrupt the sanctity of the competition. Forget about that. I want to be entertained.
I like to think of Papa Russ in those competition meetings, just breaking it down, ultimately setting on 3 hammers per team, regardless. I think like half the league still doesn't know how to use them. They don't know how to wait.
You have to do Papa Russ voice when you do Papa Russ.
I can't do it. Please, would you do it?
You don't have a limited fake Papa Russ voice, do you? No,
I don't do impressions.
Well, Ryan, I mean, we just need to worry about the competition here. It doesn't matter if they have 1 hammer or 5 hammers. I just want them to throw them.
Just hammer the hell out of them, would you?
Hey, yeah. You're getting better. Work on that.
That's exactly right. And so, look, I think half the league still doesn't know how to use them, but baby steps. I think it's still harmless fun. I've enjoyed it. I called it second screen fodder, I believe, in one of the first couple episodes that we had. When reflecting on TGL, I think it's probably a little bit more than that. And I think,
what do you have on the first screen now?
Well, Twitter, like scrolling. Okay. Twitter.
All right.
But yeah, I think season 2 has legs, particularly if live players become eligible. Bryson DeChambeau got to be chomping at the bit to get inside the simulator and mix it up with the boys at TGL. How about some real golf? Golf that is played outside. Just kidding. We're not getting to that either. Something that Adam Scott mentioned because of the politics of the PGA Tour. This is actually something we were supposed to be discussing during our Golf Today roundtable on Wednesday. Instead, it once again turned into Eamon Lynch conspiracy hour with questions about, like, should players be under contract to have X number of PGA Tour events on their schedule? Who the heck knows? But here's something, Rex, that Adam Scott said to the Associated Press and Doug Ferguson. Whereas Roy McIlroy said that PGA Tour players need to get over any sort of grievances they have and move forward with the PGA Tour and live drama, Adam Scott, who is a member of the PGA Tour Policy Board, a guy who was in the room just a couple of weeks ago with President Trump and Commissioner Jay Monahan, said, quote, he wouldn't hold it against players if there's negative emotions attached to a reunification deal. What's your thought on that?
Well, first, I want to get your thoughts on about this potential contract. I'm suddenly interested. Like, what do you think that players should have a contract?
Go to YouTube. I tried to answer it the best I could. I think my reasoning. So his point was that players have basically just been taking from the PGA Tour, and it's time for the tour to exact some control over the players. And to do that, they should be under contract to play X number of tournaments per year. My point was that if you're looking at the PGA Tour schedule for 2026 and beyond, when there's supposed to be these wholesale changes, the PGA Tour schedule should be strong enough that you shouldn't have to do that, that the top players should want and have to play in the PGA Tour events, this elevated signature model, whatever it's going to be, for competitive reasons, trying to stay sharp between the major championships, or just for status, trying to stay inside the top 70, top 50, top whatever. If you want a full answer on that, go to YouTube. Please, back to Adam Scott.
I didn't want an answer at all. I did find it fascinating reading the comments from Adam to Doug Ferguson, because they were kind of the other side of the coin of what Rory McIlroy told us last week. Essentially, Rory said those who are quote unquote butthurt, his words, not mine, over the idea that the LIV players are going to be allowed eventually to come back to the PGA Tour. And that's the pathway right now. We can sit and come up with different machinations, but the fact of the matter is, when the commissioner and Rory and Tiger and Adam Scott talk about reunification, that means those players that are on LIV coming back to the PGA Tour in some form or some fashion. There is going to be a large element of the PGA Tour population who is not going to like this. I was just texting with a tour player this morning about it, and because I kind of wanted to get his feelings, and I would read that text, but it is not for family ears. None of it is for family ears. Because the players are disgusted by this idea. Those who remain loyal to the PGA Tour, and I get it, just like Adam Scott, who is in this difficult position of understanding the, yeah, I don't like it either. And I think it's the line from Hamilton where sometimes you have to hold your nose and turn away. And that's just the way this is going to work. There are going to be PGA Tour players who are just going to have to hold their nose and look away. Because the only way that the game gets quote unquote fixed is if the two sides come together, if Bryson and DJ and John Rahm come back to the PGA Tour. Now, you can continue down parallel paths. You can continue to have those two circuits. And I was also fascinated by Adam Scott referring to this is one way forward and referring to reunification, a deal with the Public Investment Fund. I would counter and say it's the only way forward, because I think where we are right now, as far as a sustainability standpoint, you can't keep going down this road. So once you come to that conclusion, which I think Adam Scott and some folks at the tour are probably wrestling with right now, but once you come to that conclusion, and I feel like that's the obvious conclusion, then you have to also understand that, yep, there's going to be those who don't like this. Tough.
Yeah, it was a little bit curious, because if you listen to Jay Monahan's press conferences you did last week at Torrey Pines, like, there is only one option. That's reunification. Yeah. That's getting all the best players under one tour, his tour, the PGA Tour. I understand what Rory is saying in the sense of you just need to get over it. We've all benefited, because from a business perspective, like, yes, this is the only way. There probably does need to be some begrudging acceptance. But from a personal perspective, from a social perspective, I understand what Adam Scott is saying. And I think I certainly understand his empathetic viewpoint as a member of the PGA Tour Policy Board. Because I don't anticipate like there to be a particularly warm welcome for some of these guys when they come back to the PGA Tour in whatever fashion it is, whether it's sponsors anything from the signature events or putting them in full field events, however that ends up shaking out. Like, I think there's going to be friction between the players who come back and the PGA Tour players. Like, besides DJ, who I think would be universally embraced because everyone loves DJ, like, there's probably going to be some friction there. I think that's, from our perspective, that's pretty good. It's pretty good from a storytelling perspective. It's pretty good from a narrative perspective. I think there'll be interest to see how those players were interact. Remember the Masters, the first one, like, we were all waiting by the tournament practice area, waiting to see what the interaction was going to be like among the players. I think that's a pretty good dynamic that's going to be fleshed out whenever these players do make it back to the PGA Tour. But competitively, Rex, the reason there's going to be friction is because these guys on LIV are coming back to the PGA Tour and potentially cherry picking starts in the biggest events that mean the most to the players, and they mean the most in terms of a player's status. And so if you're outside, let's say, the top 50 in the PGA Tour's FedEx Cup, you're immediately endangered by the prospect of these LIV players coming back and playing on the PGA Tour. And I think that's where a lot of the animosity, that's where a lot of the bitterness, that's where a lot of the resentment is going to stem from, is that all of a sudden things have been pretty good for the past couple of years. You're making more money than you ever have before. The depth of the PGA Tour has been reduced in some sense, but all of a sudden, if you welcome back an influx or the top heavy players, all of a sudden that gets pinched a little bit.
And to be fair, I'm going to point out that this goes the other way as well. I've spoken to enough LIV players, and this is kind of where I would have gone had Eamon dropped the contract question on me, because I don't know that we necessarily need to get PGA Tour players to sign a contract, but I don't think there is a consensus among the LIV players that, okay, if there is a deal, do you want to come back? I've not met one that's told me that, yeah, sure, I'd love to come back and play 15, 20 events a year on the PGA Tour. I've spoken with players like Brooks Koepka who said, I'd like to come back and play Scottsdale or TPC Sawgrass or whatever the case may be. As you pointed out, they want a cherry pick, but I don't think any of them have any interest in coming back and joining the grind that they left, because it's a nice lifestyle over there. Let's be honest. I mean, you're only playing 14 times a year. You're only playing three rounds each week. You're wearing shorts. It's loud music. You're having fun. Like, you're making a lot of money. So there is that element. And you touched on the other half of this. Let's say of the 48, 52 players that are on LIV Golf right now, the numbers being what they are, that, let's say 25, and if you disagree with this, please let me know. 25 will probably have some sort of status to be able to come back to the PGA Tour if there is a deal, and to start cherry picking those events that you're talking about. Now, it's no small number that now all of a sudden you're looking at 100 or even 50 inside that magic number. Half of those people are going to be rotated out. So what you're telling me is half the people that are in the signature events right now, or a third of those people in the signature events right now, are having to look in the mirror and ask themselves, am I one of the guys that are going to get bumped here? And I think that's a reality.
Yeah. Like what happens with LIV, how much they can play on the PGA Tour? Like to your point, no one wants to come back and play a full 20 event schedule on the PGA Tour. Could they come back and play, I don't know, 3 to 6 events? Sure. But they're not coming back to play, no offense to the John Deere Classic, they're not coming back to play the John Deere Classic. They're coming back to play the biggest tournaments on their favorite golf courses, most likely with the biggest purses and the best competition. That would be the reason why you would want to come back in a limited capacity on the PGA Tour. And so that's still like the outstanding question, is what happens to LIV? We talked about on the Sunday night, Monday show, is that Commissioner PGA Tour, Jay Monahan, is saying one thing, and how this needs to operate under one tour, and all the best players are under my tour. And you listen to what LIV CEO Scott O'Neill said, where, you know, the prospect of a deal with the PGA Tour unlocks opportunities. They just signed a deal with Adelaide, I believe, until 2031 to host that tournament. He said they continue to sign players, quote, stars, to extended contracts. And so it does not seem like they're going anywhere. And that to me is like the big mystery, the big question mark that remains to be seen, and as well as how this sort of operates in a larger scale in the PGA Tour, in the golf ecosystem, with like the DP World Tour or some events there. Does it operate in the fall? Whatever. We'll certainly have plenty of time to get into that. One thing that, Rex, I know you wanted to get into on Sunday night / Monday that we did not get into was this quote from the aforementioned Scott O'Neill, the new CEO of LIV Golf, who said, quote, "You don't have to look too far past our leaderboard to know that outside of the majors, if you want to see the best players in the world, there's only one place to see it, and that's at LIV." You covered the Genesis Invitational last week at Torrey Pines, where I believe it was 46 of the top 50 players in the world. 25 of the top 50? Top 50
Sorry,
players
in the world? 47
of the top 50 players in the world. It certainly seemed to me, Rex, like that was a very good field, regardless of how you feel about the official world golf ranking and its relevancy in today's landscape, with John Rahm falling outside the top 50 in the world. What did you think of the new LIV CEO's remarks?
A lot like the stray that you just sent in the John Deere Classics direction. I felt like it was an unnecessary stray, because where we are right now, we're coming off of what, by all accounts, was a good week, at least behind at the front of the house. Like, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes when it comes to the negotiations, but you had the commissioner stand in front of reporters and actually sound optimistic about, yes, we're going to get a deal done. We have to get a deal done for the health of the game. You had Adam Scott, who maybe peeled back some of the layers and gave you an idea of exactly how this might work out. You had Tiger Woods, who was by far the most optimistic person when he spoke with CBS on Sunday in the booth at Torrey Pines. And then you had Scott O'Neill sort of taking an unnecessary shot across the PGA Tour's bow. And my guess is this was to appease everyone around him at LIV Golf, because it's important to point out that even though we conflate these two things, the negotiations are going on between the Public Investment Fund and the Tour. LIV Golf, whether that's Scott O'Neill or Greg Norman before him, have never been involved in those negotiations. So if you're a CEO, like Scott O'Neill is, and you have a team around you and players around you that are looking to you for answers, that in this moment, you probably did have to throw something out just to let everyone know that we're not going anywhere. Like, give me a minute and we'll figure this out. But I think the idea when Jay says we're going to come under one roof, I think a lot of people interpreted that to mean that, oh, it's going to be the PGA Tour roof and there's just going to be one tour. I don't know if that's necessarily going to be the case, but it was curious, especially the timing of it, simply because we were coming off of what everyone seemed to think was a good week.
And it was a good week for LIV too. Let's be quite clear.
Oh yeah.
I mean, LIV Adelaide is by far their biggest event. I believe it's responsible for like 40% of the revenue that they generate at the course of the entire season. You know, over 100,000 fans turned up. Like, it looked like a great show. That is sort of the model for what Liv wants to be. That's sort of the benchmark in every event, is trying to match up with it. I'm trying to give Scott O'Neill here the benefit of the doubt, because everything I've read about him has been very impressive. His business acumen is very impressive. Jay Monahan seems to like him, seems to respect his business acumen. I think if you take what he said, and again, you don't have to look past our leaderboard to know that outside the majors, if you want to see the best players in the world, there's only one place to see it, and that's at LIV. He may be meaning, Rex, if you want to see the best players in the world on the world stage, there's only one way, there's only one place to see it, and that's at LIV. Maybe saying that the PGA Tour has become, and quite frankly, is too America-centric. I could see that rationale. You know, the DP World Tour has been weakened by the defections of some of either their longtime stalwarts like Lee Westwood and Sergio Garcia, or even some of their newcoming players like Tom McKibben, Adrian Meronk, et cetera. Like, I can see that point. And so I want to give him the benefit of the doubt that that's what he meant. But if that's literally what he believes, and I thought like we'd gone past this level of like delusional grandstanding that Greg Norman had made famous over the past couple of years. And it's just like a massive turnoff to fans when you're thinking like that, when there's so much evidence to the contrary.
And I think, and again, this goes back to his job as chief executive, because there's just as much, if not more, uncertainty on that side as there is on the PGA Tour side, because you hear a Scott O'Neill or Greg Norman say that, nope, we're here to stay. But certainly when you hear Jay Monahan's comments last week, you have to start wondering. So I think on some level, this is him just sending a message to everybody in his universe that we're separate right now. Whatever happens in the future, we'll have to figure out from there, but don't jump too far ahead.
All right, Rex, we do have the Mexico Open at Vedanta World. That's the full official title of the tournament. It's a very good chance we're just going to call it the Mexico Open on the Sunday night, Monday pod. In the meantime, we're going to be firing up the grills. You and I are both at home. We are going to do a full-fledged What's on the Grill segment. We have finally figured out the back-end technology where you and I can make videos, we can put them into iMovie, and then we can upload them up for the linear TV audience. You and I will be hard at work over that over the next couple of days. And so what are you going to put on your grill that you are going to then tease for the podcast?
I think you watch the Weather Channel more than anyone. I'm pretty sure that's the only thing. Actually, I'll go back. That's your first screen. That's always your first screen. And then whatever happens to be on the second, third, or fourth screen. Yes. So you know this as well as I do, that there is a cold front, quote unquote, cold front coming into Florida. I think it's supposed to hit us sometime this afternoon. And we're talking on Wednesday afternoon. My guess is you've already experienced the rain. So with a cold front, my family, we love to do chili, but I do it on the smoker. So that's going to be, yes. And I have a pretty good recipe. I've honed it over the years, because it can get dangerously spicy. So I have learned that you need to be a little restrained when it comes to throwing in some of the ingredients.
Yeah. Cayenne, don't overdo it. Mm-hmm. That can potentially blow out some folks. I'll probably do some ribs. I may do a turkey breast. You are right about the cold front. It has moved in. In fact, Cam's, my six-year-old's T-balls game has already gotten canceled on Wednesday. So that frees up some smoker time as well. I've also been deep, Rex, in investigating a new potential addition to my grilling arsenal. More on that to come.
How do you have room?
Sunday or Monday. You always, if you want something bad enough, you make room. Simple as that.
That's it.
Sponsors, if you're listening, we'll be back on Sunday or Monday for an official, full-fledged, with video, What's on the Grill. All right. That is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lab. You guys know the drill. NBCSports.com/golf for our latest news, notes, and updates. Rex and I will be back in a couple of days for a full recap from the Mexico Open at Vedanta World and anything else that comes up in the world of golf. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. Talk to you guys Sunday night.
Talking to you, Hoboski.